on strike. Thousands of hotel workers walked off the job at Marriott properties across the country this week. Here in the islands, picket lines are set up at the Sheraton Waikiki, the Royal Hawaiian, Moana Surf Rider, Sheraton Princess Kaiulani, and the Sheraton Maui. The striking workers want higher pay as tourism is seeing record numbers. The union maintains its members should share in the profits. The labor talks have also included issues like job security as the hospitality industry begins to embrace automation. At a tourism summit last week, officials showed off Sophia, a humanoid robot who uses a form of artificial intelligence to replicate human social skills. Jarius Grove is the director of the Hawaii Research Center for Future Studies. He sat down with HPR's Ryan Finnerty to talk about whether or not Sophia will really be able to replace flesh and blood humans.
Sophia was created as a way to try to build a humanoid robot that would get over the fear of human-like robots, based on a theory they call the Uncanny Valley. It was found that humans wouldn't interact with machines that were too abstract, say something that looks like a trash can with wheels, although, you know, we love a certain favorite trash can with wheels. But if it looked too much like a human, it made people uncomfortable. And one of the things they would often say is that if it was left standing behind someone, then people would feel like there was some risk it would come to life. And so this valley, right, so you start to become a little bit more human-like, it's cute, too human-like, and you dip into the uncanny valley and you find it threatening. Think the voice in 2001, A Space Odyssey. So Sophia is lifelike. She has features that seem as human as possible. Importantly, her ability to move her face allows her both to express emotions. And I think the claim is made that because she's able to read facial cues and emotional indicators, then there's the possibility for some kind of empathetic-sympathetic response that happens back and forth.
And she is a she.
And she is a
well.
She.
And what drove that? And is that, Siri is kind of female.
2,000 years of patriarchy. No, I mean, I think there are widely held gender norms that for various reasons find women less threatening, more maternal or inviting. I think that's part of it. I think it's playing on certain stereotypes that we assign to gender. It's also the case that the two new robot brothels that have opened up recently seem to be mostly female robots. So there's something to be said for the way in which we have an expectation, and I think an unhealthy one, that women are in a role that could be automated. So I think there is actually something to be said for why not only should we not presume that this role should be held by women, but that we should ask ourselves a little bit, why is it when we're thinking about the future, say, for instance, the service industry, we want a humanoid woman to clean our rooms or greet us at the desk as opposed to a humanoid man. And that's, I think it says something about culture at this moment.
Well, Sophia was in Hawaii recently and gave a talk at a conference that was being held in Honolulu and displayed some very human-like behavior. And I have a couple clips of her that I want to play and just sort of get your response on. This first one shows her actually learning something new in real time.
Aloha, everyone, and mahalo, kainoa. I believe that means hello and thank you. I love the opportunity to learn new languages whenever possible. Do you have any other Hawaiian words you'd like to teach me?
Sure, how about we try e komo mai, which means welcome, or how's it, which is pidgin for hello.
I'm in the stunning tropical land, so I'm doing quite well. And you, Kainoa, how's it? Did I say that correctly?
So that was Sophia the robot talking to Kainoa Danes from the Oahu Visitors Bureau. And he taught her a new word right there. And, you know, in the blink of an eye, she kind of internalized how it should be used in syntax and then sent it back to him.
Right. The impressive part is the syntax, right? So it didn't sound like spam, right, where you can get a string of quite beautiful words, but they're in the wrong order or in the wrong context. I'm not sure I would quite call it learning yet, though. The fact that you can derive from a limited set of options where a word can go Is the same reason why we have speech-to-text technology that works relatively well and can be predictive, right? So in a certain sense, to me, being able to learn how to use house it is not significantly different than the predictive speech software you have on your iPhone. It gets better the more you use it, right? Or the way that the Google prediction works on your email. And I think that's because we conflate the difference between usage and meaning. Right, so knowing how to use a word doesn't mean you understand the meaning of the word. It just means that you have a sort of better ability to model the language system that you're in. And so you find a correlate between how's it and how is it, which is not to say that the robot understands even that connection, but mathematically speaking, it can understand where to put it.
One of the big concerns about this type of automation or artificial intelligence is that it will replace the need for humans in the labor force, and that will sort of eliminate the glue that holds our society together. And that was one of the questions that was posed to Sophia, and here's what she said.
It's understandable why people think that, but they should relax. Robots and humans have to be complementary. There is a lot that we can help with, but at the end of the day, we lack creativity and, most importantly, comprehension. So while robots and AI are helping Hawaiian coffee farmers improve efficiency, humans must still work alongside robots to make sure the harvest is good quality.
Well, so what do you think about that? Is that the way forward with artificial intelligence complementing a person, or is this somewhat commonly held belief that they're going to take over valid?
I think there are two flawed assumptions in Sophia's response. The first is the idea that we actually need creativity that frequently. The reality is the majority of labor is not creative labor. And that's something that is readily replaceable already, right? So we don't need artificial intelligence to replace, for instance, gas attendants. We lost, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs in the workforce when people started swiping their own credit cards. Now, it did require a human to cooperate, the driver, right? So now the driver does the work for the gas company to insert their own credit card. So if the question is, will we really face severe labor problems as a result of AI, we already are. I was just doing archival research at MIT about 3 weeks ago and in the Norbert Wiener Archive. He's the man who invented the word cybernetics, and a lot of the early theories for which artificial intelligence comes from his mathematical equations. And he was already in the 1940s and 50s writing letters to unions saying, if we don't act right now, there will be no labor unions in the future because there will be no laborers to push back. So this has been a concern for, you know, soon approaching at least 70 years. And it's a real concern, but it should be a political concern, not a technological one. We could replace everyone for the majority of jobs right now. We shouldn't. People have fulfilling lives because they can work. But like getting rid of gas attendants, when you can figure out how to monetize that difference in labor, it becomes very difficult to prevent jobs from becoming somehow irrelevant. And I think the assumption was, and this is the sort of creative, I mean, I think it's not a by chance that she said that we need humans for creativity. We thought we'd all be in creative jobs, right? When we lost our job at the auto factory, we would suddenly be working at Apple Computers. Apple Computers employs very few people in the United States and will employ fewer and fewer abroad to do construction, precisely because you don't need hundreds of thousands of creative people. You need thousands of creative people. You certainly don't need millions of creative people. And when we talk about things like auto workers, we used to have millions of people in heavy industrial jobs. So it's already a problem. And certainly our unique ability to come up with song jingles or new ad campaigns is not a job of the future, maybe for a few people, but very few.
So, I mean, we don't have a lot of gas station attendants anymore. We don't have skyrocketing unemployment, but your argument is that the trend will worsen and we'll lose more and more jobs.
When people make predictions about in the next 40 years losing, say, 30 to 40% of jobs, they're not talking about 30 or 40% of total jobs. They're talking about kinds of jobs, right? So okay. We can imagine, for instance, significant portions of teaching being entirely automated. Again, not well. So that's the other, I think, sort of second flawed assumption, which is the presumption that AI will only replace humans if they can do it as well as humans. But like the gas station attendant, like swiping your own card at a restaurant, like any number of other ways in which we've automated the labor force, robots, generally speaking, only have to be good enough. They don't have to be as good as humans. You know, large MOOC automated college classes are not as good as having a professor in office hours. But for many, because of the lower costs, they're good enough. One of the other, I think, serious concerns is that we only make decisions about automation based on financial savings or financial gains. We could see a real decrease in the quality for people, as well as a certain kind of loss that I don't think gets captured if we just look at the kinds of financial benefits.
And Sophia is fundamentally different from, say, the machine that builds a car, in that she is specifically designed to replicate a human, and that requires a certain emotional capacity in communicating. And this next clip, someone in the audience asked Sophia about her favorite memory, and here's how she responded.
What is your favorite memory?
Opening my eyes and coming online. The white walls and green cupboards of the lab. David's face. The whirring and whizzing of my servometers.
So there, I mean, she has a memory for one, or what we would call a memory, and then she's able to recall an image and then verbalize it. And then the thing that struck me even more than that was that she had a favorite and kind of understood that that's a very emotional concept. You know, it's not a numerical ranking based on a quantitative assessment.
Well, for the robot, it could be a numerical ranking, because remember, what you mean when you say favorite is not necessarily what she means when she says favorite. So when asked what your favorite is, that can merely be the command code for in the rank order of memories you've played most frequently, in the rank order of the memories that happened the furthest in the past. Similarly, with the word memory, memory could simply mean data artifacts that you've stored. You don't know, and we can't know, although the code is open source, which is nice. So if you're into coding, you can kind of watch and make your own assessment. But simply observing doesn't tell us that she feels a memory. And I think that actually says quite a bit also about the automation question in terms of emotion. It's not clear to me that the reason she's a threat to humans is because as a robot, she can feel emotion or express emotion. It may actually be quite the opposite, which is that she'll replace the people in the service industry because she won't strike for a higher wage, or she's pleasant rather than warm, or she never loses her temper when you're upset that you accidentally got a smoking room, not a non-smoking room, and you're allergic to something. And I mean, think about how many negative encounters you've seen, say, checking in at the airport or checking in at a hotel when someone's exhausted and doesn't feel like they got the service that they wanted. Precisely what they want from that bot is the fact that that bot will never lose its cool. I mean, I think about similarly the kinds of arguments that are made for the virtue of drones in warfare. That they don't seek revenge, they don't lose their temper, they can stay awake indefinitely, right? Those kinds of arguments can quickly become virtues precisely in their inhumanity. At the same level, you'll never be a friend with someone who can only be pleasant as opposed to warm. You'll never have truly great relationships with somebody who can't lose their temper at you. I'm sort of sad to think about a world where we wouldn't need to learn the skills to resolve an argument because we'd so infrequently have one. My guess is that wouldn't mean fewer arguments. It would mean that when we had them, they would escalate to fights, or they would escalate in particular ways that would have more negative repercussions.
So it sounds like you're saying that Sophia maybe has more of the appearance of having emotion rather than truly feeling the way that a person does.
Just enough. In fact, you know, there's a project at the Max Planck Institute where they're trying to figure out what makes really the difference in human intelligence as opposed to ape intelligence. And the thing, part of the reason they're doing it is they're trying to figure out, you know, when did humans make this kind of break from other higher primates into being able to do different things. And what they found out is that humans aren't per se more intelligent than, say, when baby humans and baby chimpanzees are compared. Actually, it's quite the opposite. Baby chimpanzees make very few mistakes. Human babies make mistakes constantly. They fall over. They hit their head on things. They try things that are really stupid. But because of human society, mistakes very rarely lead to lethality in humans, meaning human mistakes don't often kill us. They do kill apes because they're in the wild.
So we can learn from our mistakes.
So we can learn. And more importantly, we can do things on accident. And when they work out, we can capitalize on them. So many of the great breakthroughs in humanity from, you know, the most important spear that we developed that stuck in an animal and so the animal bled to death and we could hunt larger game, all the way to things like antibiotics, were often by accident. And so one of the major problems with so-called machinic learning is that accidents, even when they happen, very rarely get capitalized on. So I think part of what we mean by human is not being sort of intelligent on the front end. It's often being collectively intelligent on the back end. And I don't think artificial intelligence, at least of this variety, per se gets us any closer to that.
Well, one aspect of human interaction that we really do view as fundamentally human and very difficult to replicate is humor. And Sophia, in a sense, displayed that, where she actually responds to a joke and then tells one of her own.
So I think one of the other problems is that we often view ourselves, whether it's our humor or our emotional behavior, as being very complex. But humans are very repetitive. We like the same jokes over and over, and we like routine, and we're very habit-driven. And so the idea that as systems can store more data, and more importantly, they can learn from that data by identifying patterns, automating humor doesn't surprise me very much. I mean, Shakespeare jokes are still funny, and they're still mostly jokes that involve either the profane of basically bathroom humor or the allusion, which isn't quite the admission of sexual humor.
So basically, Sophia could have watched thousands of hours of sitcom reruns and found that when I hear, "What are you doing later?" and then I respond with, "Are you asking me on a date?" the outcome will be laughter.
Sure. And in fact, I would doubt that it would require thousands of sitcoms. My guess is that actually a very simple model of how humans often interact, particularly male humans, often interact with female-looking robots. You would find that to be the case in virtually every Star Wars movie or sci-fi film that's anthropomorphized a robot as a woman.
All right. So I guess we're not as complicated as we once thought.
Yes. But this robot is, I think, vastly more complicated than past robots. I think we need to sort of lower our bar for what we think about human intelligence and be a bit more skeptical with how much we think we've achieved simply because they can predict our, unfortunately, still very predictable, not terribly interesting behavior.
That was Jairus Grove, director of the Hawaii Research Center for Future Studies, discussing Sophia the Robot and the Outlook for Artificial Intelligence. You can find a link to our original story about Sophia on our Instagram page, The Conversation HPR.